Awesome recording. All right, Brandon Henry Rodriguez, welcome to the show, man. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me. All things considered, I really don't have any complaints other than some of the people we talked about before this, maybe.
Sure. We'll keep that off the record.
Exactly.
Obviously, like lifestyle wise, it's a shift, but maybe more if we keep it to, you know, industry wise, like how has that affected you in these past couple of months in terms of the work? Obviously it stopped, but what's the shift been like for you and have you transitioned?
Well, knock on wood, it's actually been okay for me. The work is still coming. I've just signed on to 3 new pictures. So it's one of those things where, and like really big pictures for some pretty big production companies. So everyone no one seems to be afraid of things coming back. People are still acting as if, which this whole town, let's be honest, that's what it is. The whole thing is built on act as if. And so they're acting as if this is going to come back and everyone's going to go back to work. And they are. The only, I guess you would say, issue or road speed bump would be when. And so everyone right now, like I was just reading to you, someone who really likes a project and wants to come on a fairly big actor who wants to attach themselves, but it's just more or less if the productions are okay with working with schedules once everything opens back up. And I think productions know it's going to be a little bit of a bottleneck when it opens up, because everyone's going to toss their hand up kind of being like, me first. But on my end from casting, I mean, I'm still attaching like our leads and big names, and then waiting to see about, you know, when really things will start filming for me to finish out the supporting and day players.
Does your gut tell you that when it gets to that stage, whenever the hell that is, that supporting and day players might have to rely a lot more on self-tapes than they already were? Do you think that getting back in the room might obviously be a totally, maybe not different experience completely, but more adjusted to this new dynamic? Like, we don't know, it's speculation, but what's your instinct?
No, I think instinctually all of us CDs can say, I think with a level of certainty that it's gonna be self-tapes. Like, that's what it's gonna be for a little bit, until things can get figured out, until things can become safer, until certain things can be created to help minimize the risk of all this. Like, it's going to be like that. And then even after that, or if people start seeing, I mean, it's definitely going to be staggered, you know, where it's like one person every 20 minutes, you know, and maybe that'll be for really important, like, sessions. But I really do believe all the networks and the studios, and even on an independent level, that producers and studio execs and network execs are going to be using what we're using right now to conduct a lot of this stuff. I mean, I've sat in on plenty of producer session, director sessions, network tests, studio tests, where someone couldn't be somewhere, heaven forbid, because of before this, but just because of logistics, travel or whatever it might be, they're on set working on something else and they couldn't be there. Where we were doing this already, you know, we would always try to minimize it as much as we could because it's better in a room. But I think now with technology and people, like I've been telling actors, start being prepared to spend anywhere from $250 to $500 on really enhancing a quiet spot in your apartment or in your home, where you do have a good mic, you do have good lighting. You do have good internet, you do have a good like recording system, things like that, because I can say without certainty or with certainty that it's definitely going to be self-tapes and Zoom kind of meeting, you know, face-to-face directors taking meetings and things like that with 100%.
That's interesting with the self-tape setup, because obviously that's something that, as you say, isn't totally new. But I guess, you know, a lot of times, like, it's easy just to kind of rely on your cell phone. And a lot of times the cell phone's more than fine.
Absolutely.
But I guess, say, the sound aspect is a different aspect that maybe you wouldn't think of, right? So that's where we're looking at investing in a mic for your cell phone that's actually going to pick up the sound in a better way. Or if you've got a DSLR or something, get a proper mic that's not the onboarded mic, just because that's key. What about readers? Because that's always an interesting one, right? Like, say for an actor now, for social distancing, it might not be as easy to get a reader in person anymore. What's your take on that? Like, I know I sometimes, when it's been a super quick rush and I've got a sort of short turnaround, I've got someone to just like Skype in and like do it through Skype, or worst case, record the lines myself and overlay them if I have to. But what's your view on that when it's super tight turnaround and you ain't got no one?
I hope that during this, especially this time, or while these things are being figured out, you know, that there are, people do have time, more than maybe in the past. So I would always say there's something really beneficial about having two people doing what we're doing right now. We're looking at each other. I can give you stuff. You can see my reactions to things. We can play off each other, stuff like that. Like, if you have actor friends, obviously that can come, you know, help you with that. I always try to say, even before Corona, always steer clear of like the dad or the significant other who maybe is not in the business and they don't get the idea, because being a reader is a very important part to all of this. You want to make sure that they give you something, but also aren't taking everything and trying to get the job themselves, it seems like. And so I think now it's important to, I would say, Skype it in. I've people before have done the thing even before Corona where it's like they have the lines recorded, but you can always tell when it's a beat before, beat after, when it's this and that. So if you got to resort to that, look, you got to do what you got to do. And we'll be very understanding to the fact of the time that we're living in. But I think everybody could probably get a friend, an actor buddy or something like that to say, hey, can you Skype in and do this with me for 30 minutes?
Exactly.
And you can set that up just like the eye line that you would normally, you know.
Quick geeky techie question around that then. Sure. So if you do that, say like on a webcam now over Skype or Zoom, the maximum resolution you can probably get out is 720p. I don't think you can get 1080, even if your camera goes up to that resolution. So it might not look as great as if I did film it straight off my phone, as opposed to over like a software thing like this. Would that in theory sort of count against you, perhaps, if the quality was,
well,
I know performance is key, right? But
sure, of course. No, but I get exactly what you're saying. I mean, look, like, we, you know, it's all about, this business is all about presentation. So you want to present yourself the best way possible. And so, but I think when it comes to actually you recording, so I send you have an audition, right? You should record with your camera, because that shoots in 1080 or 4K, but the person you're reading with can just be on the laptop. We're never going to see them, so I don't give a shit about seeing them. So, but I think definitely, I don't think you should, like, yeah, I would say not to record on your laptop or your desktop or whatever that might be. Like, again, shooting on like a DSLR or your phone, while then having just your laptop set up so you can see the reader. Is what I would recommend.
Yeah, I realized as soon as you started answering that question, I was like, oh yeah, that was a dumb question. There was a clear, obvious question. I'm glad I asked it, because it's like, yeah, the answer is obvious.
You'd be surprised. I'm telling you, it's not a dumb question though, but it's because it's a really important question. Because there's a lot of actors out there who are doing a lot of these open calls, and a lot of these people now who really have not done anything yet and might still be trying to break in. And so they're trying to figure out this world and figure out the professionalism of how things are. So that's really good, because I think they could hear that and be like, okay, great. Don't film on the thing, in my opinion.
I mean, it's one of those where, you know, you just normally want to focus on your performance and getting the material down and knowing the world and looking at the story. But then to add on tech on top of that, you know, in a time pressure, pilot season or whatever, like, it's, you know, quick turnaround for some people. The last thing you want to worry about is the fucking tech going to work? Is the upload going to work properly? Is that link private the way it needs to be? And it's, you know, you just got to do it enough times to get used to it. But to your point.
And that's the thing, everyone's just going to have to learn to do that. Like, becoming, like, again, creating, like, your business. You are the business as an actor. Like, you are the business. Like, you're your business. So invest in your business. Invest in yourself. Invest in the financial aspect of, again, finding that space where you can create, where you know, like, this is for this, you know, that the camera set up, the lighting set up well. And again, like, you guys, we all do have, you know, friends who know how to light stuff, DP friends, director friends, writer friends, actor friends. So it's like, you know, use those resources to be like, hey, how does this look? Or how do I achieve this? Or what can I do? And I guarantee anywhere between $200 to $500, you could get like a chill,
oh yeah,
cool, easy setup, I would imagine. That's like, and $500, I feels like that's like
high, end. High end. Yeah, that's,
yeah, exactly. So good. Okay, good. Yeah, again, I'm so bad with that stuff. I don't know technology. I just think like, yeah, I'm like, that's $500.
Just a nice round number. I mean, you could, but I think for a lot of people, that number might be scary at first. And it's like, well, you don't, no, I think you could do it for a couple of hundred if you're talking about lights, camera, microphone.
Because those ring lights, right? Those ring lights are pretty good, right? Those things work well. I always have an apprehension to those things, but, you know, whatever, that's just me.
I mean, I don't know. I personally think natural light is great if you can get it and use it, and it's going to actually light you in the right way. Of course, if it's nighttime like it is here now, I don't think, you know, that's going to work. But go on YouTube, you see 3-point lighting setups, and you can figure out how to do it.
There you go. Yeah, the ring light's freaking out because it seems so Black Mirror, because it adds this thing in your iris that's like these circles. It makes you almost seem so robotic. And like,
I mean, maybe that's going to be super relevant for the new material that's going to come out after this pandemic, though. So
yeah,
maybe that's our casting angle moving forward.
Yeah,
that's the thing to go for. All right, dude, let's, if we can, just backpedal a few steps, because I see that we can super quickly go into so many topics, but which is awesome, but I'm mindful that, like, I'd like to give a bit more context to you and your background. So it'd be great if you could maybe just speak a little bit to, I guess, what inspired you to get into casting, and then obviously your journey from going through working on some of the TV shows you did to then obviously setting up your company in its own right and where you are now.
Yeah. So I started in front of the camera. I started as an actor. I studied, I trained, and I moved from the East Coast to here, worked, you know, did the whole thing, get an agent, go to things, go to this, book a job, get commercials, do these things, all that stuff. It was great. Had all the jobs, waiter job. I sold ADT. I mean, I did it all to make it work, right? And then I had a casting director who I knew really well, who would pay me $25 and lunch to come in and just be the tape runner, the person who ran the camera.
I thought you were going to say reader, not even to be a reader.
Not even to be a reader, just to do the camera. And I was like, okay. So I was like, yeah, why not? If I had nothing else going on. And that was a real eye opener to me as an actor, to really see how, if you bring in 40 people for the same role, how you can, how 40 people can see it all differently, but yet they all see it the same. And so I would do that. And then she was on this television show called Wilfred. And then on the second season of that show that was coming up when it got renewed, she goes, hey, do you want to be my full-time assistant for second season? And I was like, no way. I don't know casting. I'm an actor. Like, never going to happen. And she's like, look, I never once knew casting. And now I'm, you know, here I am. I'm like, all right, touche. And I said, yes, as well with caveats. And she agreed. And I started working on it. And then I'd say probably like around the third or fourth episode, I was just telling my agent, like, I can't make it. I really can't get away to go do this, or I would pass on something. And it just became apparent to me inside my heart and my soul how much I really loved. I started loving casting and like what I was seeing, what that was. And from that moment on, I just made a clear decision that that's where my heart was going to be at. And that was, I mean, I think like over a decade ago. And since then, I mean, I worked with some of the best casting directors in this business. You know, I've learned a lot what to do from them, but I've also learned a lot what not to do from them. And it just got to a point where I was just really happy with where I was, and the people I was working with, but I knew that I needed to take a next step. And that next step was me trying to venture out on my own to do my own projects on my own, to make my own mistakes, to make my own successes and to have everything fall on me, whether good or bad. And I made that leap and I took that and took that next step. And that was about a little over 2 years ago, almost 2.5 years ago. And it was the scariest thing ever when I first started, when I first did it, but it was, I couldn't be happier. It was the right decision for me, for sure.
It's always an interesting time when people make a big leap or a big decision like that, especially when it's the idea of, I guess, stepping away from a safe kind of environment, or maybe someone else is taking the accountability, and then it's all on you. So what was that transition like? I'm assuming it didn't happen just in the space of a week. Like, do you kind of remember loosely the time frame of when you sort of had it set up to then actually go from, okay, it's an idea to it's an actual reality?
Yeah, you know, people have been saying that I should, and I was like, no way, because I was loving the individuals I was working with, and they were giving me so many opportunities to do things on my own or to have co-credits with them. And they were just the best humans. I mean, there was 10 of us that worked in this office, from casting directors to associates to assistants. And I mean, we were a family. I mean, that's what it was. But there was just this moment after one project where I was just like, I if I don't do this now, it was just like a thing, really, where I just kind of woke up and I'm like, if I don't do this now, I'm never gonna do it, you know? And I just talked to them and said, hey, I love you guys, but I this is something like I'm going to try and go do. And if it fails, I hope you take me back because I love you guys. But, you know, I had to do it. And they gave me big hugs and well wishes. And I finished out a couple things with them. But then I just, you know, that was that, really.
It's, I guess, the mindset is always a thing that I find intriguing for people. Because you said just before that you were scared like crazy jumping into it. And I think in some ways, it's like, it seems obvious, but it's always interesting for me when, as an outsider, you hear someone else talk about their story and say that they were scared. And you go, yeah, of course. But you can never really understand because no one's walked that walk. At what point did that initial, or maybe not so initial, fear start to just dissipate into, no, I got this? Or not that I've got this, but like a bit more relaxed with, you were okay. You didn't have to run back.
Yeah. You know, I had a teacher, my acting teacher, who I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you if it wasn't for her. And she always used to say, you're only as good as your last job. And I've always thought about, like this project that I'm casting right now in this business could be my last job. No one might ever call me again. I might never get an email to see if I'm available to do another project. Or like, you just, in this business, you're only as good as your last job. And I've always just had that in the back of my head. And I guess that's been like a motivate. That's been like a drive for me to just want to keep on. Like, you gotta make the work for yourself, you know? That she was the best acting teacher and business teacher ever, but the best life teacher was my mother and father. And they always used to say, if you ask for nothing, you get nothing. So I think it was like that fear kind of started going away from me when I had a film as I was leaving. It was a really small independent film, but it did really well. And I did that and I was like, all right, well, I got this. So at least I'm leaving with something, you know? And I think you also just have to be logical about these things too. I don't think you can be like, well, I've got nothing set up, so like, fuck this, I'm leaving. You know, I think you have to have like, okay, like I have these one or two people. I have this one like connection, you know, I have this one project, at least that I can keep moving forward with. And so I at least had that one thing with like a potential, like one or two other things that were being discussed. So it's just like, you know, you just, you got to walk through it though. I mean, it really is just like, okay, this one job that I do have could be my last job, but I'll never know unless I do it. So you just like, I don't know. Like for me, I've always just been like a really weird risk taker. So I've just, You just have to take you just have to take that risk, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it's being practical with how you take them, like you say, that you're not just diving in blindly, but not afraid to do it, which is easier said than done too, right? Entrepreneurial, I guess, is ultimately what it comes down to, which is a word that you don't hear much, I guess, within the realm of, you know, film and TV and creative arts, but really we all are.
I think that's it. It is. I mean, it's different now because, like, what, 20 years ago, like, you could just be an actor. You could just be this. But look at Reese Witherspoon. Look at the people that are creating television shows while producing this one, while executive producing this one, while starring in this one, while co-writing on this one. Like, you can, like, you can learn, like, but you have to get to that point. You know, you have to be proactive in getting to that point.
It's interesting. So, I always, I do say that to, like, other friends, and his own mantra for myself, it's look what they're doing at the highest level of anything, acting or otherwise, finance, business, like whatever. So to your point, if Reese Witherspoon or George Clooney or Brad Pitt all have production companies and are making their own projects as well as going in other people's projects, there is a reason for that. So how, maybe naive isn't the right word, but how almost pretentious of me would it be as an actor that's not at that level at all to think that that wouldn't apply to anyone else as well? You know what I mean? It's like, there's lessons to be learned, I guess, from what they're doing and apply to your own situation.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at managers, you look at agents. I mean, they build something up and then they go somewhere and they start a production company or this or that. Like, you know, it's just like, it's all about growing. I never in a million years thought when I moved from the East Coast to come to LA that I would, as an actor, that I'd ever be sitting here talking about you about casting. But you can't be closed-minded. I think the moment you say, hey, like, this is my one thing, like, you limit yourself. There's so many beautiful things in this world and in this business that you could find yourself going towards. And if you're interested in it, learn about it. See if it's something that you like. And if it is, then learn about it more. And if it's not, then you can say, hey, I tried to learn about this and I didn't fucking like it. It's not for me. Like, so I just think, like, you should constantly just be being creative in a way, or just not expanding in a fact to, like, create some these, like, multiple businesses, but just expanding to create your own mind, expanding to create your own energy and, like, your understanding of life in this business. Like, if you say you want to be in this business, then know this business. Like, try to learn different aspects of it. Like, I'm not a writer, but I work with them daily and I read a bunch of things all the time, and it's really interesting to see a process, or I have friends who are writers. So just, it's just be open to all that, you know?
I guess it also gives you empathy for, in that example, the writers, that you don't have to know the specifics on a nuance level, but you know enough to hold a conversation with them, but also to understand their process when you do work with them, because you know, there's nothing worse than when you meet with someone who doesn't know a damn thing about what you do, but tries to pretend that they do. And I guess it enriches what you do too. Like, you know, if as an actor, you learn about a little bit of cinematography or editing or writing, you're not going to become one of those things per se, but you have a deeper empathy for what they're doing. I love
that. Yeah, especially when you get in a position of doing something where you can say, like if I ever started directing, so who knows where life goes, if I was ever then, like, and then I had a casting director do something, I would have so much empathy for the casting director and what they're going through. I'd be like, hey, look, I get it. Like, I get how hard it is and, like, how time consuming this can be. Like, I would understand that, you know? So I just think it's like, just like I've seen showrunners and creators and directors, the things that they have to go through, I'm like, man, I don't want to have to deal with that right now.
Showrunning must be, I mean, I watched, it was called Showrunners, that documentary, I think it was a few years ago. Great, but oh my God, I was like, I knew it was a tough gig, but that's like, your life does not exist. That's just,
Yep.
Respect, but I don't know how you don't go on a vacation for a decade after you do one of those.
But that's the thing, because I think, though, for the most part, I know a couple showrunners, and I actually think the ones that I'm talking about, they don't need to go on vacation, because they get to literally look back and be like, and they're sitting there being like, and I think this is what makes good artists artists, and creatives creatives is because they actually look at what they're like, someone's paying me to like create this vision of that of mine that I have. Cool. Like, you know, and I think they really have that like appreciation for that. So I feel like one in particular, like she doesn't need to, it doesn't seem like she ever needs to really like take extreme vacations because her being on set and creating is in a way a vacation. Like it's so freeing and fun to her, you know?
Yeah, it's true. It's like, I always go to the analogy of like Picasso or Van Gogh or Rembrandt. They painted because they wanted to paint. It's not like Picasso said, I'm only going to paint a picture when someone pays me for it. Because if he did, he'd probably only have got like four pieces of work in his whole lifetime, right? And I guess, you know, why should that be any different for the kind of type of art that we do? So, yeah, I like what you're saying. If you are creative.
There's a good story, if you don't mind, about Picasso. I think it's Picasso. He, or it's Dali. I can't remember, but his, one of their, whoever it was, their gallery agent or like, you know, art agent at the time called and was like, look, you know, we have this really rich buyer in New York who wants like 8 of your paintings. Can you get it done in 2 weeks? And they were like, what the fuck do you think I am? I'm not a machine. I'm an artist. I just can't put out 8 this and that in 2 weeks, this and that. They're like, they'll pay you $6 million. I mean, and this is then. And so the response is, great. So you said in 2 weeks? Okay, cool. Yeah, no problem. Because at the end of the day, it is called show business,
sure,
and not show art,
sure,
for a reason.
Sure.
And I think it's like, again, if that person can pay, like you look at Clooney, he always says 2 for them, 1 for me, 2 for them, 1 for me. And so I think if you can have that balance and an understanding, then, you know, go
for it. I guess, yeah. And until the business comes calling with the $6 million check, you still want to be honing that process. Because I guess if he was stale and not painting on the daily, he wouldn't be able to bust that out as a process in 2 weeks, nope, and get the paycheck. Nope. So it's, you know, what comes first, the horse or the carriage, I guess, as they say.
Totally.
All right, dude. I was going to dive into questions that people have sent in, but I see people are in the waiting room already because we've just been shooting the shit and chatting and chatting, which is great.
What I'm cool with, I know you got a time soon, but it's all, I get it.
No. Like, so what I'll do is I'm going to bring in people now, and then if we got time, I'll circle back and get to some of the questions.
Cool.
So they're not waiting. So let me bring in the first person, which is Ore, and I hope I'm not butchering her name. Come on, technology.
Hello.
Hey, Ore, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'm going to shut up, and I'm going to just let you say hi to Brandon, who's here, and let you kind of have a bit of a chat and ask any questions you have for him.
Hi.
Okay, great. Hi, how's it going? How are you doing?
I'm doing well, all things considered. How about yourself?
I'm good, thank you. You keeping well and safe, social distancing and all that over there?
I can always speak for myself that I definitely am. My kitten's behind my back right now. keeping safe. My home office and yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, so I don't want to take up too much of your time. So I suppose my major question to you is, if you could give me a number one tip regarding sort of auditioning material and attitude when auditioning for LA casting directors. Obviously, I'm born here and my acting range is between 20 to 36, believe it or not. I'm 37 in July, but I don't get cast for the roles in my 30s. Thank you. So I just wanted to have a rough idea of what I should look for in terms of auditioning material. And I know it's a bit different in LA compared to the UK. So
you're saying like what, like how to audition here or material or?
I know, for example, there seems to be a lot of talk at the moment of ensuring that you're using sort of film scripts, and over here that can vary a bit. So I just wanted to sort of ask you, you know, film scripting the way to go for auditions, I suppose, for the casting side of things, and just to get a general vibe of what it's like to audition in LA.
I think, I would recommend if you're just kind of like putting yourself on tape and you're not being requested for something specific, like if a certain film isn't being like, hey, we want to audition you for such and such a role, here are the sides and here's the script and here's the material for it. But if it's just kind of like an open call or like a general call, which I know is happening a lot here in the States, in Los Angeles, it's just a lot of casting directors are just saying like, you know, we just want to see you do a 2-minute tape, you know, dramatic or, you know, comedic. And I would always shy away from failed pilots that never went.
Okay.
Because those usually don't go for the fact that the comedy or whatever the reason that the material's just not landing.
So yeah,
that's something that you don't want to do because it might still show that. Doesn't mean all the time, but that's how I would see it. And I would steer more towards doing plays, actually, you know, taking like some really cool contemporary theater plays and kind of putting and using those, because it's stuff that a lot of people might not know or do know, but they can be very well written and they have really, you know, deep characters and you can read the whole thing and you can know it all and all these stuff. So I would always lean towards doing a tape, like for an open call from doing a play, a scene from a play. And then on top of that, just I would also steer clear of doing anything like when it comes from like features or scripted television shows where people won Oscars or Emmys for, like if someone sent a tape in and they were doing the scene from There Will Be Blood where Daniel Day-Lewis goes, I drink your milkshake. Like no one else can do that. Like, so don't do that, because you are now setting yourself up to be compared greatly to one of the best actors ever to live, who won an Oscar for doing that part. So it's not often, but I see that sometimes. So like, I would stay away from that. Lean towards plays, lean towards old television series or, you know, scripted television series from past episodes that have aired, that are still on air or, you know, have been canceled recently, but those kind of things in my opinion.
Thanks so much, because I was actually told the complete opposite.
Daniel Day-Lewis, drink your milkshake. I mean, I was told
more to go more towards film scripts, but I've actually been using theatrical material, so I just wanted to double check with you. That's what I've been using. Yeah,
you can also do film stuff. I was on a Zoom where a young lady, she did a scene from Mean Girls. You know, like,
great.
That was great. Like, because it's like it's right for her. She was like 16, 17 years old, so that's like the stuff she should be doing. You know.
I guess it's not doing like super famous pieces, like you're saying, right? That everybody knows. Like if you're gonna do a few good men's courtroom scene as Jack Nicholson or Tom Cruise, you know, like you stand no chance. There was that time. You remember Swordfish, that movie with Travolta that came out? There was a period I remember where everybody did that John Travolta opening monologue, and it was almost like the running joke of, if I see Swordfish at another time, I swear to God, I'm gonna lose my shit.
No, I've also seen the few good men scene where I'm just like, okay, I'll watch this, but I'm not gonna be as good as Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise, but by all means.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. I really appreciate it. And stay safe, guys.
You too. Thanks for coming on.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Awesome. I think we're on a roll. Let me bring in the next person.
Please.
Let's bring in Scott. Scott's a buddy of mine, but he's in LA, so I thought we'd bring him in because he's actually based in town, so that's good. Connector, are you eating, Scott?
No, not this time.
Okay. Sorry, Brandon. It's a running thing. Whenever Scott and I talk, he's usually eating something.
That's true.
Right. I'm gonna leave you guys to it. I'm gonna shut up. But Scott.
Hey, Brandon, how you doing? Nice to meet you.
You too, bud. You too.
Nice, nice. How you holding up in all this?
Honestly, you know, it's this thing that everyone's always like, how you holding up this? I'm actually doing pretty well. Like, you know, it's really difficult to see a lot of the people, how they're impacted, especially our frontline workers. But, I'm being asked to literally stay at home where I have a television and I have some video games and I got internet and I got my desktop and my phone and I got a garage and I have some workout stuff and I have a piano. Like, we're okay. Like, you know, like everyone just, you know, it's good. It's, you know, let's keep us and not be selfish and think about other people. But so I'm doing good.
That's awesome, man. I love that. It kind of segues into my question, because like the first kind of question I wanted to ask was, you know, a lot changing in the industry right now, and there's like a new form of it like coming in from somewhere. And I'm just wondering like what you're hoping your job in casting, and also maybe hoping what the industry might look like on the other side of coronavirus.
Say it one more time.
Just like what you may be hoping of or wishing for what the industry or in your job in casting might look like after coronavirus. If there's any changes that you like that might be quite interesting, you know what I'm saying?
I don't know if there will be changes that I like. I know I'm gonna miss. There's something really great about reading people in person. I know that's gonna change, and that's something I'm gonna miss. Ashley and I spoke about it before people got on to ask questions about, you know, where the business might go, especially on casting. And I think self-tapes is definitely going to be the new normal for a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to miss that. But when it comes to other stuff, like I'm not, you know, I can't really say or no. I mean, we're all trying to figure out, you know, and I think it's, producers really have the brunt of having to figure out how to make all this. Like Brian Kavanaugh Jones, he's an amazing producer, and he wrote up an article, like, or a piece. He had a little interview talking about how he sees things coming back, and how independent films in particular will be able to continue. And so I just think it's just, people are just going to have to just figure it out and just be smart about it, you know, like just to be smart. You know, I think it's just really hard to say though. Like it's hard to say what will be and how it'll be, but one thing I know I'll say I will miss is doing things in person.
Yeah, for sure.
I like that. I'm old, you know, like, it's going to be weird. Like not even like if when Ashley comes out here from, and we go grab lunch one day, like I think the idea of people shaking hands is going to be gone, you know? And I think like I was raised to always shake someone's hand and look in their eye and greet that person. And just that little thing, I'm going to miss that, you know? Like I really think that's, I'm going to really miss that.
Yeah, man. Yeah, me too. Yeah. Another question I had was just, if you're an actor at this time during quarantine, what are the things that you'd be focusing on? What would you be looking to
yourself,
do?
Man, you know, I see these things like posted on Instagram that are like, if you don't come out of quarantine with a new side hustle and two new skills learned, then what did you do? And it's like, fuck you, you asshole. Yeah. Like, you don't have to do that. Like, right now can be a time where you can just sit with yourself and let this affect you, however that is. And if one day you want to do something and one day you don't want to do anything, fine. Whatever you want to do, but on an artist level, you are the instrument. You are the art. You are the artist. Like, go inward. Like, look at yourself, learn about you more, see how this time affects you and what it's doing to you. Like, you don't have to feel like you have to be doing something. Like, just be, you know what I mean? There is no right, there is no wrong, just be. And so I don't know, that's my stance on it, is just, I think so many people can get caught up of like, I'm not doing enough. It's like, it's okay. Like, we're in a global pandemic that has never happened before. Like, this is in generations upon generations. Like, this is forever changing the scope of how human interaction and human existence is going to be on this planet. Like, you don't, like, we're all figuring this out. Like, it's like, you know, and posting things like, people were posting like, remember who checks in on you and after this and, you know, this and that, if they don't check, like, it's like, why are you, like, who's promoting, like, judging individuals because, like, if one of my best friends I feel isn't checking in on me enough, like, I'm going to judge them and be like, I don't remember you fucking calling. Like, I don't know. It's so inhuman. It's just like, allow yourself to be. If you want to create 19 side hustles out of this, great. If you want to just sit and let this be sad to you, sit and let it be sad to you, man. You know? Yeah. That's all I do.
Dude, I love that answer, man. That's amazing. We're all human. That's it. At the end of the day,
yeah.
It's gorgeous passion, man. I love that. I got time just for one more. It's a little bit of a snippet. I just wanted to ask, like, I just love these with people, but if you got to go back in time and give your younger self a piece of advice, just one piece of advice, that's all you have, what would it be?
Is that it? Is that the answer? Was that the answer?
It's a good thought.
I would, you know, on a career wise or just like life wise, like
I just think whatever that means to you, it doesn't have
just to
compartmentalize.
Just to no need to stress.
Yeah.
Take away. There's. You don't need. We don't need to stress. Like, look at this little guy.
Oh man.
Like, no need, there's no need to stress. Just take moments as they come, enjoy them, learn from them, don't stress out, and have more fun. But I would also then say on the flip side, be smarter with investing or, you know, doing certain things like that, or I don't know, like, yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. I feel I would just be more freaked out if I saw myself back in time, be like, oh my God, one of us has to die. Like, you know, like some looper moment.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, looper.
but I don't know. Yeah, I think I to put my hand on my shoulder and be like, hey man, it's not as stressful as you think.
I think that's a good one. Yeah. That's awesome, man. Thank you so much. I love that you pulled the kitten out in this. That was, I mean,
that's now the thumbnail for the episode when I put it on
it's
YouTube.
It's gotta be.
That's it.
Yeah, man. That was it. That totally made my day. Thank you, Braden. Great meeting. And Ash, thank you. It's a great show, man. What you're doing. Love it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Have a great day.
You too, guys.
Take it easy, Scott. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, man, that was a lot of energy in that one. But it is like, you know what? No, in a good way. I think my view in the last year or two is that life's a big old fucking contradiction anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I used to always think, because it was a cool thing to say, you got to be like, I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? That whole thing of like, you have to say you don't care. And I did say it, like, I go back 5-10 years because it feels like you got to say that. And then I kind of came out of last year where I had some family health issues and my dad was unwell and I'm looking after him and I'm away from the business and like he passes away and it reframes everything and perspective changes as it does with stuff like that. And I'm like, whatever that idea was before of I don't give a fuck was such ego bullshit that now I look at it and go, well, I literally don't give a fuck for like legitimately, but I also really do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all live in that balance if we're really truthful with ourselves in some capacity where it's like the noise externally of the judgments of other people is what gets us. But like, I care. I wouldn't want to read for you and do a shit job and be like, oh, well, yeah, I don't care what Brandon thinks. Like, no, I'd want you to like think that it was whatever good. It's more that then at the same time, there's a capacity to then go, but I'm not going to carry that with me for the next 2 weeks and like get stressed out about it. and fret about the small things, I guess, like what you were saying, which...
And, you know, it goes back, there's that old saying, you know, if you love something, let it go. If it comes back, it's yours forever. But the most important part of that is if it doesn't, it was never yours to begin with. And I try to tell actors all the time, like, go in, do your thing. Be as prepared as you can. Do the choice that you wanted to do. You know, be bold in it. And if at the end of the day, you book it, that means it's yours forever because it's forever going to be on camera and it's forever going to be there. If you don't, it was never yours to begin with. So move on. It was never yours. So that's okay too.
Yeah.
So I think it's like, yeah, I just, yeah, it's all perspective. It's like, again, like, and we want you to do good. Like casting directors, when actors walk in through the room or get a tape, we don't have an actor walk in or get open up a tape and we're like, I hope this person sucks. Like, no, like we like, man, I hope this person blows my fucking mind. Like, you know, we want the best for you guys. So yeah.
It's just as like anything in life. It's totally subjective and there's no magic pattern or formula that if you do A, B, and C, you're going to get D, E, and F. And
I think, this business.
Well, not in anything. I think we're realizing with this lockdown that maybe in a lot of businesses, that shit doesn't apply either. And I think that's true. The big takeaway. You know what I mean? So anyway, that's a bigger conversation for another day.
We'll have a spinoff.
A spinoff where we talk about the federal government and like bailouts. Right. Let me bring in the final person in the waiting room and get her in here and get her questions. This should be Safa. I hope. Hello.
Hey. Hello. Can you see me? No, you can't.
Safa, are you there? Because I can't see you. Oh, now I can see you.
Hi, Ashley.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for doing this.
No worries. Say hi to Brandon and then ask away whatever questions. It's your time.
Awesome. My question is, do you tend to look for talent in the UK? And if so, do you look for talent through agencies or is it through Spotlight?
So Spotlight's a great tool for us, also agencies.
Yeah.
It's always project-based or however things are. Certain projects have certain restrictions or caveats that some don't, some others don't. But when it comes to television in particular, we scour the earth for pilots and finding
stories,
right? From South Africa to Europe to Latin America to Asia to, you know, I mean, it's just, we have the technology now where people can do these things and we can bring them to light. So there's no hold back, you know, a lot of actors, that I cast, you know, like maybe like slightly bigger names or bigger name actors, like, you know, who are based in the UK, they also have representation here. So I can always start with them and, you know, be connected to the UK rep, or if they don't, like I can find their UK reps or their, you know, European reps, whatever it might be, and reach out to them directly and all those things. So, yeah, we, you know, we're open to seeing the world really. But it's definitely project, per project. Yeah.
Probably budget because you have to sponsor the visa, right? The O-1 visa?
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, if you've got one and you can work an amazing, or if I have a project that's shooting in a different country or a different location or say in the UK or things like that, then obviously it wouldn't be an issue. But that's a big issue. But, you know, with networks and studios, when it comes to pilots, even if there's not... and these are usually for the leads for these shows. If we met you and we loved you and you were right for this part and, you know, you went through the process and tested and everyone loved you and wanted to get you on the show, you know, they would sponsor your visa. They would get you out here, all those kind of things and all that stuff. But when it comes to like, you know, if I was hiring, you know, the person to play a barista on a film that was shooting in New York, Yeah. Like, I would be searching for talent in the UK for a line, you know, for two or three lines.
Yeah, of course.
So that kind of stuff. But yeah.
Okay, cool. So how do you think actors based in the UK can get the most out of pilot season and episodic season? Do you think they should come to LA or New York to get the most out of it? Or?
No, I think though, I think there could be like, I always think like building your credit in your own region is important first. Like if you live in Sweden and you can do like three or four shows in Sweden and you're like the lead of one of those. Yeah. And then you can come and maybe meet for 2 weeks some agents or something like that and see how that works. But I think it's important to build credits in your region first. So if you can hit the UK, if you can do Europe and you can build there, it proves the people across the pond, oh, cool, like she's working there, the BBC trust her, or like these networks trust her, and like these kind of things trust her. So this is all really cool. It makes us feel a lot more confident in moving forward in something. So I would definitely not worry about expanding to some new region until you really feel you've really done
enough like credit,
where you are currently.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Awesome. Thank you so much. I found your email address on IMDb Pro. Can I send you my CV?
Of course.
Awesome. Cool. Nice. Well, thank you so much. You too. Ashley, thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you, Safa.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye, Brandon. Thanks.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I'm going to put a disclaimer. If anybody else finds your email address, they can only send you memes.
I live on memes.
The memes are strong during the lockdown. I'm not going to lie.
But even before lockdown, man, I'm talking like on work emails, like between me and like my old bosses too, like someone would send an email and I had one that was like a guy that was like this great, I guess it's more of a GIF. Can a GIF and memes are different, right?
They're different, but they're in the same family. I think we can group them in the same family.
No, but I had this one I just used where it's like a guy with literally like he was holding his phone and it just said bruh. And he's just like going like this and like drops his phone and like falls out of his chair. And that was like, I felt like most of the time, especially during pilot season and things, like me on the daily, where I'm just like, hey, oh my God.
It speaks volumes. I used to use two classic ones. There's the Kermit the Frog sipping on his tea.
Yeah, great.
You know, or like there's a Christian Bale one from American Psycho where he's just pulling this really stupid face, but it speaks volumes. I can't do the face because it's only Christian Bale that could do it. You know, he's...
I like the one where it's like the little dog is like sitting with a coffee cup and like everything's on fire around him and it's like everything's fine, everything's completely fine. Like you
I know, think that's everybody now, isn't that like everybody right now basically?
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome, dude. Well, look, those are all the people that have come on and we're gonna come in and then sort of have questions in person. I did have a friend who was gonna try and make it, but I think she was doing a Zoom class right now, so I'm gonna ask her a question. On her behalf, and it's an interesting one. So she wasn't quite formulating the wording the way she wanted, but it was along the lines of when you know your casting type or niche or brand, whatever we want to label it, how do you best suggest actors try and market that? You know, like obviously we can do many things, but the industry will see us in a certain way at the beginning. Do you have certain tips on how best to maybe cultivate more of a presence in that niche? How do we show that off, I suppose, is the word.
You know, I know this might sound crazy, but just do your job. Like, just be good. Don't worry. I think like so many people when they get into acting, they worry about like, you know, nowadays like Instagram, like this and like how do I this and blah. It's just like just
I think study. It's more I think it's more from the perspective of like headshots to a degree, but more your demo reel. So hypothetically, like with this actress, she's probably more sort of akin to the indie film market. She'd be great in like Woody Allen style movies. Like she's got that vibe and that essence. So I think her question is more angling to the perspective of should I try and work on projects or create my own work that shows me in that kind of world? I think that's more where she comes from. And if so,
yeah, I definitely think you should be creating your own stuff and like showing people what you can do. But at the same time, you could also be really educating yourself with on the filmmakers that you do like, the people that you do want to work with, you know, be reading the trades, be seeing what these people are doing every day, what projects they have in development, what things they're working on, where things might be knowing, and having those discussions openly with your representation, with your team, to be like, look, like this is my style of how I like something. I would love to like, how can we accomplish this? How can I accomplish getting in to read for the casting director that does these people's work? Like, if you really love Fincher, like how can Mary Bonneau see me? You know, if you really love this, like how can you, you know, for these day player, one line, two line, whatever things it might be. But I also think don't just pigeonhole yourself in the idea of like, this is what I like to be in. Like, also accept what people are gonna see in the mirror, like sperm meets egg, and this is what's here, and they're gonna say, all right, Ashley, I only see you as just this for the next 10 roles. You're like, all right, I know I want to do this, and I know I'd be better at being a doctor, but if you see me as this, then okay, fine. And you know, I think like you have to accept what's in the mirror looking back at you, and knowing what they're gonna allow you to be, you know, at least until you're able to say, hey, you know what, I've done this 10 times, I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we've seen that with loads of famous actors that have played that game with Tom Cruise, with Jim Carrey, like they played a certain role or type countless times, right? Yeah, and I guess it's, you know, it's aesthetically what you're seeing, obviously, but I suppose it's also, again, as an essence of a person, as a human, like I might like David Fincher as an actor and I might like, you know, his work and I like to watch his films and his shows, but maybe my essence doesn't fit in his world. And just because I'm a fan doesn't mean that I got to go up for every Fincher project because you're beating a dead horse.
Like they want to, which I understand, they want to be like, I can do everything. You know, like I can do comedy, I can do drama, I can be a bad guy, I can be the good guy. I'm, look at my feathers, I'm a huge peacock, I can do all these things. And it's just like, maybe, you know, maybe. But right now, show me two feathers, you know, show me two feathers. Let me know you can do two feathers really well.
And I think to that end, to sort of wrap up her question then, you know, I guess she's better spent using her time focusing on what are those two feathers and how can I, you know, work on those kinds of projects, shows, films. And if I'm making my own work, maybe some of that is going to let me play with some of the other feathers, but I should at least show you those two in something, right?
Yep, absolutely. Just like when I, like workshops or showcases or things like that, like don't do, like you have to be smart about things. It's a bit, you know what I mean? Like first impressions are a lot, like, and you have to know your audience. Like, so if you have these people watching, like don't do something because you know it's what you might want to do, but do something that you know that you have a good chance at being booked in and that's relevant too. Like, I don't know, that's just me, but at the end of the day, there's no wrong, there's no right, just be the artist how you want, but there's got to be a level of, I know. Yeah, you just got to play you got to just know, you got to know yourself and know the audience.
I guess it depends what you want, right? But if you want to play the game of Hollywood or the industry or whatever we call it, you got to know the parameters of the game to play it. And then if, you know, it doesn't work out, maybe it's because you played the wrong parameters with what the game is. And you know, I think that's maybe the way to try and look at it, because you could do whatever you want, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
That is a thing. Awesome. Okay, a few more questions in no real specific order. So Dominic has asked, it's not really the visa one, it's more about accents. So he's saying, how necessary is it to have a good general American accent for international actors who want to work on US productions. Now, I know what you're going to say, but I think it's good to have it sort of out there so people can just hear from you directly. I mean, for everything that I've heard, I think everybody would always say, if you don't have a good, strong American accent and you want to come to the States, then you're really kind of shorting yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you're just limiting yourself. It's like, you know, you just, yeah, you're just completely limiting yourself. Oh, there you are. I think it's like important. I think that's something that you should definitely be working on, a standard American accent, you know. I mean, even newscasters, like American-born newscasters, but one that's, say, born in Georgia who wants to do prime time at one point, they have to learn to get rid of, like, maybe some Southern drawl they might have, or someone from New York might have to get rid of some East Coast kind of thing, and they have to be more standardized and more general standard American accent, because it's a broader, it opens up to a broader audience. You can't have like Peter Jennings being like, "Kanat and hello everybody, this is Peter Jennings." Like, people be like, "What?" They need that broad idea of things. So I just think it's like you said, I think it's just vastly important. It's something that you should work on and want to always work on.
On a spinoff from that with accents then, say you're casting someone in a project who's supposed to have a Spanish accent or a French accent. Obviously, you know, you could come in, I could come in with a really strong, heavy Spanish Castilian accent, but that's not going to be good for the audience. So what's the advice you give to people who are supposed to play a character that has an accent, but what's the level, I guess, is my question around this. Like, do you want it just nuanced, a hint of it? Do you want it to be as authentic as possible?
Yeah. And if you can be as authentic as possible, for sure. You know, I always tell actors who are foreign that have a natural, their native tongue has an accent, not standard American. One sec. Excuse me. To
bless you. I hope you're being tested, man. That could be the COVID.
And I always say to come in the room in the standard American, because the moment you come in and say you have a British accent or an Australian accent or a Spanish accent or whatever it might be, and you're talking in that tongue, I'm like, and then you try to drop it and then go into a standard American for the role, I'm always listening to see if I can hear where you might still drop it. So if you can come in and send an American and just say, "Hey, hi, how are you? Nice to meet you. This and that. Cool. Any questions? No. Great. Awesome. Let's go." And then you do all that. And then when we're done, if you're like, "Okay, great. Have a good one," and you come in your natural tongue, I'm like, "Oh shit. Like, interesting." But we always listen if you come in before. So I would always recommend doing that. But yeah, I would just work on those for sure. Yeah.
That's interesting. I've not heard it that way, but it's an interesting from the psychological perspective of how you might interpret it. But what you are saying, which I think is important to highlight, is don't hide your natural authenticity, you know, at the end, like let you guys know who you are as a person, but maybe that thing of at the beginning, the mindset. Okay. I like it. Interesting.
Close our minds, but all of a sudden, like, if you're an Aussie and you come in and you're just like, "Hey, like, I'm Jake," and da da da, and I say, "Okay, cool, Jake, awesome. Do you have any questions?" "No," or "Yeah, there's one character like this and that." "Okay, cool. We talk about all right, great." And then you do your scene. We redirect. We don't. We do whatever. It's like, "Great, have a good one." You're like, "All right." And then you drop in and you're like, "Bye." And it's like, "Oh wait, where are you from?" Like, "Oh, I'm from, you know, Brisbane." Like, "Oh my God," you're like, "I had no idea your accent's like." That's like, oh. But if you all of a sudden come in like that, again, we're always looking to be like, are they gonna drop out?
And so, like, Brandon, we're talking first impressions here more than anything, though, right? We're talking about people you've not met before. Obviously, you met this person, you bring them in, you know that they can do it, right? What about when it comes to self-tape them with that? Would you then say on the slate, put that at the end and do that in your natural accent? Or would you say do the slate
at the end anyways? It doesn't matter when it's a self-tape, because, like, we can move it around or do whatever how we want. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I guarantee you that when you do a self-tape or even in the room, the slate is not going to be like that's what makes you just lose.
Oh, no, no. The slate's the worst fucking thing of any auditioning process. It's the hardest thing to do.
Yeah, just put that at the end. And if you have that, if you have a natural native tongue from wherever you might be, yeah, do it there.
Awesome. Okay, a couple more questions. So Mohan's asked a question saying, how do you see the role of disabled actors in Hollywood? And is representation for that demo growing, or do you feel it's still something that's underrepresented? What's that kind of looking like?
There's no doubt it's underrepresented. I mean, there's no doubt it's underrepresented. Is it growing? Sure. Is it fast enough? Probably not. But, you know, like I did a film where I just had to, last year, where I had to find an African-American male to play 17, but, you know, who's 18 or older to play 17, who has cerebral palsy. And that was very difficult. You know, that was a very difficult search. And they had to be local. They had to be local to the Los Angeles area. And so, you know, I do believe it's highly underrepresented. And I, you know, it's like, you know, I would love to see, you know, like some 35, 40, 45-year-old high partner, like high powered partner, you know, who's at a law firm and, you know, this and that and blah, blah, blah. And they have only one arm. And we find that actor, you know what I mean? Like, why can't that person, you know? And so I just think there's, I think it's highly underrepresented, but it's unfortunate because it's not often written either, you know?
Yeah, that was going to be my question. That's normally where my mind goes with anything around diversity, representation, whatever you want to call it. That ultimately, do you feel that comes to the writing? Like, we can talk about producers and networks and studios, but ultimately there's got to be the material there for those voices, for those demographics, sure. Like, and it's got to be authentic.
Yeah, but the writing can be, again, like, say, like a 40-year-old partner at a law firm, you know, good looking, has a lot of charisma, graduated, you know, first in his class from Harvard Law, like all these things that would be in a breakdown, not once mentioned about having any form of disability. But as casting, I think it's important to look and think outside that box and present those options and say, well, why can't it be this person?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's a lot of what we have to do sometimes as well. You know what I mean? But the problem is that pool can be very small or not represented well. So,
yeah, I mean, does that make it, I don't know, in one sense, my mind goes, would that be easier because you have less people to find? Or is it actually harder because they don't have the reps or they're not sort of pitched as much or you just don't know about them? Like,
it could be all that.
All that, right?
Like, honestly, like all the above, really. You know, there's certain agencies that deal heavily with actors with disabilities or just, you know, who are disabled. And but it's, you know, it's not a big pool. Like, you would have to do a pretty deep search and like find that person that, you know, just going out on the limb and doing, you know, a national search where you're just looking up and asking people that, you know, maybe from the VA's office and doing these things and reaching out to people and be like, hey, do you have anyone that fits this description? And when they put themselves on tape and you hope to find that natural charisma, that natural charm, that natural understanding. So that's like a big part of doing searches like that, you know?
It's a lot of ingredients, right? And then to the example you gave, then if they got to be a local hire, you're just looking at all these permutations.
Exactly. It's like, then it's like, you know, this film that I did, it's really great. It looks amazing. It's really cool. I'm happy to have cast this person, but like, that's a huge limitation on casting. Like, if it was like a Disney project or Marvel or something of that nature, and they had them and they're like, great, hey, you know what? We have the ability to bring this person from here and you go and scour the earth for this person. That's great. That would be amazing. But sometimes we don't have that ability, you know? It's like, hey, they need to be like Los Angeles, like, or New York based, or just this bit, you know? It's like, okay, like, great, you know?
Yeah.
But but we make it work and we find it. And this kid who we found was just always so impressed and just amazed. He was great.
In some ways, is that maybe more rewarding? I mean, you don't have a barometer to compare, right? But
100%, that's more rewarding because it's amazing. I mean, look at what Peter Butter Falcon was, you know. The two writer directors of that worked at a center where there was a lot of individuals and persons with Down syndrome or who might have been on the spectrum. And they met the one kid who played one of the leads opposite Shia in that, and Dakota, and they were like, we love this kid. So, like, he wants to be in it. Like, we're going to write him something. You know what I mean? And they wrote that for him. They shot, like, a teaser with him. Like, they did all these things. And, you know, Shia, because he's such a fucking awesome badass, that they went to him and were like, hey, this is a movie about this kid. And, you know, he's the lead, this and that, da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, it's good. He's in it. He was just so on board, you know. I think you got to have, like, that movie in particular was a really big thing. But then there's also that flip side of, you look at What's Eating Gilbert Grape, and what Leonardo DiCaprio did in that was amazing. But I don't think in today's climate, and you can see that as fortunate or unfortunate, that would be allowed to that would be allowed to happen nowadays.
It's just a different time. It is, you know, I don't think we can judge either way, but I think you're right. I think in today's climate, there'd be a lot of backlash before he even got the chance to put in the performance. And I don't know if that's right or wrong. I don't even know. It's not even about that. I think it's just a different conversation that we're having now, which is a needed one anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the final question that's been sent in is, what show or film, what project would you have loved to have cast if you could have picked anything?
Ever?
Sure. I mean, let's say in your lifetime, just to keep it a little bit more nuanced.
Like something from the past that I've seen or a show that
I've seen? Yeah, I guess like if you could look at a show or a movie and from the outside look at it and go, that would have been awesome to be involved with. And cast.
Okay, if I could cast, I'll do one for each show. I would have loved to have cast Lost.
Okay.
And then film, I would have loved to have cast. Jesus. I would have loved to have cast Almost Famous.
Ah. Good movie. Not what I was expecting, but I mean, the cast is pretty strong there already, right?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, both those projects are.
Yeah, but, right.
Yeah, I mean, they're great. Again, that'd be like me doing a Drink Your Milkshake, because what April Webster did on Lost is just, I mean, like, she killed it. I mean, she, like, you couldn't, like, it was great. Yeah. Killed it.
Awesome. All right, dude. We could chat for hours and hours, but we both have days to get back to you. So we could do a version 2 in a year where we talk about the Fed and all that stuff, like we said, and it'll be the COVID fallout. To wrap it up, what I always like to do is 10 quick fire questions that I basically have just taken from inside the actor's studio. So let's do those, and then we'll round this off. So the first question is, what is your favorite word?
Fuck.
God damn it, that's the favorite swear word question. Okay. What's your least favorite word?
No.
What turns you on in a creative, intellectual, spiritual kind of way?
Creatively, a really great team, like working with a good team. Like, there's nothing better than working with great, like a director and producers and people like that to make something happen. That's awesome. When everyone's firing and a lot of egos, all egos are left, and everyone's just all hands on deck trying to do something. Like, I love that.
Yeah, when everybody's bringing their A game and you can just feel like it's rowing in the same direction, that's the way to go, right? What turns you off then, conversely?
I think egos and when people don't do their job. and laziness.
Which all kind of one leads to the other sometimes as well, I guess, sure. Right? Okay, question five you already answered, which is what is your favorite swear word? But if you want a bonus to say something different, maybe something in Spanish.
Well, then I'll go back to the first one. That's not a swear word. I guess okay. my would be with passion.
Fine. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So question six is what noise or sound do you love?
Honestly, I love the sound of when you're vacuuming and then you hit a little part and you hear that and you like hear that you're getting stuff in the vacuum. I'm like, I love that noise.
That's the most specific answer I've ever had to that question. That I think James Lipton ever got. I don't think anybody has.
I love it. You hit that vacuum and it just hits that thing and you hear that little like those little cracks.
Yeah.
That you're getting something. Oh man, I'm like, that's great. I love that. I love that.
I feel like that sound needs to have its own word or something. Like if it doesn't, you need to make one up and put that on.
I don't know what it would be, but I love it. I love it.
Awesome. What sound or noise do you hate?
I think like a mother crying. I think that's really hard to hear. Yeah.
It's when it's heart wrenching, I think as well, right? When you know.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
There's a lot of pain behind that cry. A lot of fear, a lot of sadness. I think that's like a really hard thing.
What job or profession other than your own or the ones you've attempted would you most like to take a shot at?
Honestly, if someone would pay me, I'd leave casting right now. If someone wanted to pay me to go and like hunt humans that poach and hunt and abuse animals, I'm there, man. I'm all there. Sign me up tomorrow. If anyone watches this and they want me to do that, I'm all in. That would be for sure it.
Definitely. That's like cleansing of the society and human race, plus a really great documentary. That could come out of it.
If you pick on something that you can't fight back, like these people that go and shoot like these giant lions or shoot elephants and like, yeah, it's just like, and they're like, they pay this money to go do it and they're like 200 yards away and there's no skill involved. It's literally just to fill some sadistic ego.
It's for, like, half of it's for the picture too, right? Like half of it is for them to pull those stupid fucking faces of like, you know, look what I've done. Look how powerful I am because I fell this animal. It's like, dude, go one-on-one with the animal in its own environment and see what happens.
Take a knife or a spear. And if you go into that and you can do it, cool, man. Like, awesome. You deserve that. You deserve to wear that coat. You know what I mean? But all the, it's just like, yeah. So I don't know. Like that, I would definitely do that if someone wanted to pay me to.
I don't know if that's a job, but you know, we can maybe.
I know.
The world's evolving, so maybe new jobs are going to come out of this crisis. Maybe we can, you know, be a bunch of people that go and hunt down Tiger King and all these exotic animal herders and. Well, you can pick now whether you want to see the actual documentary or the Nicolas Cage live action version that they're doing.
I'm gonna go Nick Cage all the way on it.
Like, I think Nicolas Cage is probably gonna do the most nuanced performance of his life, and he's probably gonna win awards for it.
Dude, that's gonna be amazing. Nick Cage is such a good. I love it.
People just see him as obviously eccentric and think of like his movies like Face Off and stuff, which are great, but he can act. Like, I think this is going to be different to what they think. Yeah.
I love it.
Okay. Second to last question. What job or profession would you not want to attempt under no circumstances?
I wouldn't want to be. Uh, I wouldn't want to be, I feel like, I guess this is maybe the safe answer, but I wouldn't want to be like a doctor. You know, like not like a pediatrician, but like a
surgeon.
Like a surgeon, like, I just, for numerous reasons, but yeah.
I think it's more accentuated with the times that we're going through, obviously, and, you know, the respect that you have to have for what they're going through now. But even aside from that, it's just, yeah, dealing with a lot of doctors last year, as I alluded to, like, you just see how they have to find this capacity to give really sometimes devastating information to people, but still try and emotionally disconnect. But I don't know how you can. And there's something that I don't know how they manage it. They take it home with them or what. It's still a lot of pressure, a lot of, like, a lot going on with that.
No, it's that would be the toughest part for me is, again, I think it would go back to that of hearing the mother cry or the gut wrenching sound, like that. It, like, it's just, I just couldn't. And also, like, then someone's life is literally in your hands, and, you know, then on top, like, blood and just all these different, like, I can't, like, there's so many different reasons why I couldn't be some type of, like, surgeon or something like that.
I hear you. All right, dude. Final question is, when it's all said and done, what would you like the story of your life to be?
What do you mean? Like,
well, open to interpretation, I guess. Okay. I guess it's more from the angle of, how would you like to be remembered? Like, if you were going to have an obituary, or if you could have an idea of a legacy that you'd want to leave, what would you like that to be? What impact would you like to have made?
I don't know. That he was passionate, loved the people that he loved, stood up against bullies, fought for things he believed in, and always tried to put a complete smile on someone's face, even a stranger, you know, just to share positivity and shed goodness. Like, I know it sounds hippie, but I just, you know, it doesn't take a lot to make someone smile. It's really easy. It doesn't cost anything to be nice. It doesn't cost anything to be gracious, but at the same time, to stand up against the things that, you know, are right or not right, and to not be afraid to say, hey, that's not right, we're not doing that. So I don't know what that would be, but that
whatever that is, I think encapsulated, but I think, you know, it's, there's a lot of truth in that, right? And I hear you. I think, again, you know, not to sound too sort of downbeat about it, but I think the times we're going through now highlight that more than ever, right? And I think a lot of people are in that approach and mindset anyway, but I'd like to think, coming through this, that there'll be even more of that, you know, for a lot of people who just, maybe we see perspectives differently. And it's an ongoing process too, right? Like, we can all get so caught up in our daily lives, but I think it's a really good and powerful reminder. So thank you, man. Look, last few minutes, I guess, for you, really, like, what kind of key takeaways do you want to leave for any actors that might be watching or listening to this? What kind of key bit of advice or sort of key thing would you want to leave them with off the back of our chat here?
I'll leave just with this one sentence, and actors can think on this, how they let them interpret how this is, but to ask permission is to seek denial. And always remember that.